Okay, thank you for the opportunity for me being here as the first speaker in the session. I'm glad to be here and see that there's a lot of different topics all around the same topics of interest for us, that is research topics in cropping systems. And my name is Guillermo Marcillo. I am a PhD candidate and a graduate assistant in the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State University. The topic of today's presentation is exploring establishment and phenology of cover crops seeded by broadcasting methods, and what models and observations from the field can tell us. So first, let's put us in the context of agriculture in the Midwest and Iowa for the most part. So you see that we have a very narrow growing season where we can get cover crops established correctly and on time. So broadcast seeding cover crops may be an alternative for extending this very narrow growing period and don't get until very late in the harvest of the grain crops by September or October. And there's enough research evidence that suggests that broadcasted rye cover crops can help to improve soil and water quality. And it might be the case that broadcast seeded cover crops is on a more cheaper alternative than other, perhaps more effective methods, but it's a viable economic alternative for that. In this plot, I'm just showing results for other colleagues who have done work on broadcast seeded cover crops and uptaking nitrogen from the field. And when compared to no-till cover crops seeded without incorporation, we expect to see a lower response in nitrogen uptake, but it's still there. And the figure on the right represents a long-term exploration of cover crop impacts. And cover crops have been shown to be effective in reducing the loss of soil carbon in the top 30 centimeters of the profile. And these results come from simulations. However, when we think about models in particular, most of the conditions that we represent are nearly ideal. So that might not be the case for farmers or producers who want to explore more economical yet less effective methods of establishment, such as a broadcast cover crop. So our question is how these predictions would change if we represent more realistically that those conditions in the field. And we know that in order for us to get benefits for a cover crop, we first need to establish them properly, right on time. And second, we need that those cover crops produce enough biomass so we can get a benefit out of them. The sad part of the thing is that both outcomes, establishment and biomass, are quite variable across sites, across years, and there's still too much to learn about it. And the second topic I want to raise in this part of the presentation is that we don't really know much about the physiology of a cover crop under broadcast conditions. So we wonder if that would be different from other grain cereals. And among those lines, our major rationale in this project was analyze how establishment and phenology may help to improve the representation of a cover crop in a process-based model. So to that matter, we specifically set out to go to the field, quantify plant populations, and estimate how much of the ground cover is covered, is the work of the canopy of the cover crop. And we did that job in two sites in central Iowa. Second, we recorded phenological stages and set out to compare development rates or crop development rates based on our field observations and what a model can predict. And further, I will finalize my presentation proposing plans to improve biomass prediction in the Midwest and hopefully in other areas. Here is just a schematic representation of how complex can it be to think about a simple maize, rye, soybean rotation in the Midwest. The tool that I use in my work is a production simulator called Apsim. If you're not that familiar with the tool, I just want to say that it's a full suite of simulation incorporating different models for plant, soil, and atmospheric processes in order to get a final outcome. Starting out with meteorological inputs as a point of basis, and then allowing the model to run different physiological mechanisms coded as equations in those models, and finally producing a full suite of outputs of what we can expect out of the cover crop at the end of a season. So for the field study, it covered the growing seasons between 2015 till 2017, and we chose no-till plots in central Iowa on corn or soybean with a seeding date between August or September in the fall and termination at a fixed date in the April of the consecutive year. So in the field, we counted populations and tillers at two times of the growing season in the fall and spring. We also go there and take pictures of the field to estimate how much of the ground cover is the effect of the canopy effect. Here is the photography, and next to is the digitized photograph in the lab. For phenology, we recorded plant status based on international scale called saddle system, which is basically just looking at morphological changes in the plant and assigning different codes or categories for each transitional state. And leaf stage is basically just counting the number of leaves as it progresses through the main stem across the season. So what we learned in plant population and ground cover in the 2 years of the study is that no major differences were detected weather-wise. Although we see that in one of such sites, we experienced a significant diminishing population. And my take on that is that the spring of 2017 was pretty irregular. And we have an alternation of very hot and very cold days that might have eventually triggered senescence, rapid senescence, driving huge mortality in those plants. And the other point I want to take a note in here is that the ground cover in the second location was much significantly higher than in the other places. And my view on this is probably some treatment configuration effects, because both Kelly and ISUAC were testing cover crop impacts with different experimental configuration or layouts. So in Kelly, for example, I have only one standing crop at the moment of seeding the cover crop, whereas ISUAC have both phases of the rotation side-by-side comparison plots. So that may be one of the reasons. Anecdotally, in the field, I noticed that the broadcasted cover crop was doing much better in soybean plots. And there have been research that suggests a beneficial effect of soybean, but still there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered yet. Here I am showing figures for phenology on the left, on the right, how the model absing interprets final plant status on the y-axis, final leaf stage on the y-axis, regressed against thermal accumulation by the model. And on the left side, this is not prediction, this is just a comparison of the thermal routine implemented by Absin against a much simpler scheme for GDD's accumulation. So in other words, Y in the figure on the left represents thermal GDD is calculated on a simple linear scale with no thresholds in growth. So computing average temperatures per day above a base of 0 Celsius degrees where growth occurs. Absin implements a still linear approach with a slight variant proposing threshold temperatures, optimum, minimum, and maximum temperatures. So that's why AppSim is more conservative at the moment of predicting thermal accumulation. As you can see here, for example, 500 degree days in AppSim is a bit higher when we use a linear model with no temperature specifications. For the most part, set of the stages or phenology of the cover crop was well predicted by AppSim. About 22% of our observation of the predictions were in the range of what is expected. Not so much when we do the prediction of leaf final state. And this is something important to consider, because I'm going to show next how useful can it be to know about leaf progression in cover crops. Also, a key message from this plot is that the conditions in which the cover crop is represented by the model is default, with no variations, with no tuning in of those parameters. So there's a lot of room for feeding those parameters more accordingly. This is crop development rate, and what I'm using as information here is again field records on the right hand side, and predictions from a process-based model on the left. So leaf stages as predicted by the AppSim model regress against thermal time in the model, and field records of plant stages against GDDs on the x-axis, and linear trends whose slopes are quite representative and could be meaningful in physiological terms, because what you get from the coefficient like this is a number in GDDs per leaf, which in physiology is commonly known as a phylogen rate. And crop development rate might be the building block of iterating and producing final crop estimations at the end of a season. So you see that there is a lower number predicted by the model, and this model has been idealized for grain production in other parts than the Midwest. Here I'm showing figures based on field records that are slightly higher, that suggest that the cover crop under broadcast conditions might be developing at a slower rate, slowly. So to conclude, I want to say that from field records, I have learned that plant populations in broadcast seeded cover crops might not be as low as they seem, at least in the Midwest, that might not be the case. Phenology follow usual patterns of small grains, but crop development rates might be lower than what is default and what is presented in the models. So what is left to learn, and my lab is working in trying to reduce uncertainty in biomass predictions, and to do that we can learn about things that happens in the field, and we can estimate physiological parameters better to reduce such uncertainty in predictions. So just for your information, I don't want to explain this in detail, I just want to make my point that kind of a funneling process where we incorporate information from the field, the uncertainty in biomass predictions can be reduced by targeting physiological parameters more appropriately, and as a result, biomass predictions can be significantly lower, or the uncertainty can be significantly lower. That's my information contact. And with that, I just want to conclude and say that I'm open for questions, and thanks for your time.